All right, we are here. Welcome, welcome. As the date of this particular meeting, this particular love and healing, see, it happens to fall on September 11th. We're delighted to say that the topic is quite pertaining. The energies are intense. By the time this is being listened to by others who are not present at this moment physically, the energy will have quieted down, things return to normal. But it's always good to look at martyrhood, because two things: martyrhood can be nobilized, that the death of someone caught in the line of fire in the midst of a disagreement between philosophies and attitudes, religions, etc., can be seen to have occurred so that others who support the same religion or philosophy as the ones who've died can use them as inspiration for fighting back. These people who die, the memory of them, of the people who loved them, who cherished them, who honored them, do not want this to be forgotten. They don't want death to be, quote-unquote, in vain, although deaths occur in vain every day. They want some deaths to be special because of their significance in a conflict. In other words, everyday soldiers dying on the battlefield don't get quite the same leverage, don't get quite the same remembrance. There's only a few of them every day, and they don't hold some kind of singular, unique point of history. They are not caught in a position of martyrhood. It is harder to nobilize them because there are so many, so frequently. Memorializing something requires that it be singular, unique, individual, that it doesn't happen very often, or that because of its particular unique event, something big changes. Now, the United States certainly went through huge changes following 9/11, revealing itself as being a country totally involved in supporting the whole concept of martyrhood. Not that we would like to, for everyone to forget those who die, but generally the whole concept of martyrhood is that these people who died on 9/11, 2001, were innocent. They had nothing to do with war. It could be argued that soldiers themselves who were sent to war are not necessarily innocent or whatever, but they're not going out there without thinking that they want to make a change, they want to make a difference. It's these people who are caught making a difference, who didn't intend it, who could be much more easily remembered and memorialized. Things such as circumstances such as in Russia, where this guy attacked a school and killed a whole bunch of children. Children, innocent, they had no intention of changing anything. They didn't go to school that day thinking that they were going, that they were making a difference, a particular difference in their society. The innocents caught in the crossfire. It is good to remember them, particularly if you knew any of them. It's particularly good to acknowledge the services of the fire and police and all those people who gave their lives, who worked hard. But underneath it all, it would be far better if the country would just give up martyrhood. But it's more of a case of, we are going to do martyr better than you, Al-Qaeda. We're going to do martyr better than you, Muslims. We're going to do martyr more noble, because after all, God is on our side. The remnants of an old tribal condition, situation, where when you fight another tribe, you appeal to the gods, you pray to the gods, or in this case, to the only God, the only one and only that is ours, not theirs, to protect us, for us to win. And if we win, then our God is better than their God. Their God is weaker. Their God's a wimp. Very macho, of course. But what, of course, most people don't realize is that whoever loses a battle is going to create more nobility. It's going to be able to create more God, you know. Our God is better. They can rationalize it anyway. So you never get rid of it. Never get rid of the continuing back and forth. We want to have the last word because we want our God to be established as the right and true God. We are right, they are wrong. The foundation of every argument, every conflict, in a personal relationship, in a business situation, in a between countries, you name it, it's the same conflict. And the one who feels wronged can always rationalize themselves as being right. It just wasn't revealed at that time that they weren't appreciated for their wisdom, for their truth, that the truth was destroyed. This is typical of what we call martyrhood. Martyrhood is a form of victim consciousness. A martyr is a bit more emotionally sophisticated, a bit more angry than the victim. The victim generally tends to be very scared, caught in fear, feeling very insecure, always feeling at threat, feeling always somehow vulnerable to being controlled, manipulated, hurt in some way or another. And of course, it is indeed true to a certain extent that there are victims. Very often children appear to be victims. Now, we're not going to go into major detail about how when you came into this life, you chose the basic elements, the basic issues and themes, the basic woundings of your life. And most of these occur in childhood or in adolescence. And these woundings and these hurtings are all meant, in a sense, for an ultimate direction, an ultimate purpose of soul development. But that still does not excuse the actions of those who perpetrate it. those who become the perpetrators, in slang language, the perps. The perps acting out of their rage, out of their pain. They too are victims. But they utilize a much more advanced form, advanced in the sense of complexity, a victim consciousness. They are more martyrs. The most typical martyr, though, is not someone who acts on their rage, acts on their pain. The typical martyr will explain it, intellectualize it, and rationalize it. Martyrhood is more of an intellectual attempt at controlling anger and making sense of it, and keeping a little piece of hope alive for a future in which there might be resolution of conflict and justification for whatever they feel, think, or experience. A time in the future when that person who has been injured one way or another, emotionally, through words, through ridicule, through criticism, physically, through injury, or very often, very likely, through circumstances in which they did not have the power, the final say. These people, these intellectual orientations that they use, enable them to continue a fantasy around themselves, a fantasy of them being right. It can all be manipulated, woven, twisted to make them appear right. Some people are right because that's what God says. And God says it through the holy book. Choose your holy book, the Bible, Quran, whatever. I am justified in my thinking. I am right, even if at this time I look powerless, even if at this time I have been put down, even if at this time I don't have access to manipulate and control everyone. I'm angry. And I'm righteously justified in it. And I'm waiting my time until it's my turn. And then they will see. They will see that I'm right. I will be cleared of all wrongness. I will be right. Now, you can understand how this can contribute to endless war between nations. But it's the endless conflicts in relationships, in people's private lives, where you see the most dramatic use of martyrhood. You see it in the sabotage of business opportunities, the financial losses. Martyrhood very often plays a major role. Martyrhood plays a major role in the breakups of relationships. Martyrhood plays a major role in people feeling isolated, lonely, unhappy, miserable. Martyrhood is deadly. It's toxic. It's a toxic twist. Now, we mentioned that there are indeed victims. Children are indeed at that tender age not really having the experience, the know-how, the strategies of response that could enable them to make the choices they need. Children don't tend to think, I'm right and they're wrong. Children don't know enough to go to that place. Children aren't often mature enough emotionally to be able to even be angry, to be even able to be righteous. Instead, children fear that maybe something's wrong with them. Maybe they're messed up. Maybe the world is against them. Because maybe they're wrong. Maybe they shouldn't have come in. Maybe they're a burden. Maybe something's not right with them. There's no anger per se. There's more fear of, gosh, how am I going to survive if I am incapable of taking care of myself and I'm at the mercy of anything that comes along and everything that comes along. Yes, victimhood is that state of consciousness, more a fear-based state, and it is terrible indeed. But by the time you get into adolescence, you start thinking you know it all. You start thinking that you're right. You reject your parents in one way or another just so that you can start to establish a separate identity. You're very strongly connected to injustice. Yes, a child can feel injustice and can feel it's not fair. But it's the adolescent that feels that whoever is creating the unfair situation to them and putting them in the weaker spot deserves to be punished. They're angry about it. They resent it. So it takes a bit of adolescent arrogance, you might say, a place where the ego really builds and develops its persona, its facade. The facade of I'm always cool, I'm always calm and composed, regardless of what happens. I'm above it all. All of that facade, not truly realistic, but underneath it all, built on a whole framework of major amounts of rationalizations and imaginary mental ramblings. The martyr has a tendency to feel that no one appreciates their wisdom, their truth, their rightness. No one appreciates how much they do or how hard they try. No matter what, the martyr feels unappreciated. Now, the martyr develops deeply in the 20s, a person's 20s, where they get out into the world and really bang heads with people, come up against the walls. They've had their wounding. They have their shame to hide, to cover up, to keep hidden all their weaknesses. And they've made an arrangement, a philosophical arrangement with life. If I do certain things, then I can make people be nice to me. If I support people, take care of people, listen to them, even if I don't want to. If I'm nice all the time, even if I don't really feel like it. I'm being a good person. And damn it, that should show them up. They should feel guilty. They should feel bad for treating me the way they treat me. There. I'm a good person. I try really hard to be kind and pleasant, loving, to do the right thing, to be helpful. Now, of course, interpretation can vary on what doing the right thing and being helpful is all about. Many people feel they don't want anyone else to be quote-unquote helpful because they remember so many times people who come and interfere and meddle and tell them what to do as being helpful. But you see, it's all a spin on things. The martyr spins everything to where the martyr can do anything, can punish, be mean, be totally terrible. But it's all kind of undercover. It's all seeps under the surface. It's never anything that you can point to and say, look, you were really mean there. Who, me? Says the martyr. No, I was only trying to help. I was only being a good person. I was only speaking the truth. The misunderstood one. The martyr. Now, there's a lot of leverage that people can have with the martyr if they find somebody who is gullible to being made to feel guilty. A martyr can essentially run their life. Oh, but you're not being kind. You're not treating me right. You're not being a good person. If you were a good person, then you'd do this for me. And if you're not doing that, you're not being okay. You're not being good. And a person who is susceptible to guilt can follow along until there comes a day when they get to a place where they realize they're tired of being manipulated through being guilty. They're tired of feeling guilty, and the anger that underlies guilt, that neurotic anger underneath there, comes spewing out, attacking the martyr, the manipulator, who then, of course, tries to use it to their advantage once again. See? You don't appreciate all I've done for you. Whereas many people are aware that a lot of this pattern came perhaps from their mother. Mothers perhaps been given the role of martyr more than anyone. You're not allowed to have your own life, was the old maxim for women, because you won't ever be secure if you go your independent way. You won't be loved, you won't be taken care of, you won't be able to get married and have a happy life, etc. You must be of service to others. So there's a particular type of martyrhood that women have been stuck in. But unfortunately, the problem of it is that no matter how much you sacrifice as a woman, and you sacrifice for your children, you sacrifice for the sake of the marriage, you keep your mouth shut so that nothing, no conflict happens, you're protecting everybody from conflict, you're being a doormat that everyone can walk on. If you want to know more about that, listen to last week's question and answer. A good example of the response other people have to martyrs. The great service person tends to be a person that nobody really wants to be around, because underneath that service is a manipulation, an attempt to control other people through guilt or shame or fear. Now, it's not like women, in their true aspects of loving and caring, don't really care for their husband or family, the children, etc., that they don't care. It's not that they don't care. It's the self-immolation that they feel is expected of them to be part of loving. So where the martyr is most twisted is in the definition of what loving is about, how to be loving. Now, of course, loving and being spiritual come together. So many people who are spiritual, male and female, who see themselves as spiritual, can go slip right into that martyrhood slot and feel unappreciated by the world at large, feel separated, feel that they are misunderstood. And if only people could understand them, if only people could hear their truth, they could be accepted If only people would appreciate who they are and how hard they try and how noble their intentions, they would be redeemed of all critique. They would be justified. They'd be cleared. It's an easy place to go to because it seems so spiritual, it seems so noble. But that's the trap of martyrhood. That you can think yourself, your ego, your limited, immature ego, and think yourself so noble, so high-minded. But underneath it all, there's just an attempt to manipulate others into seeing you that way. It appears subtle when you first get into it. Once you're aware of it, it stands out like a sore thumb. A person who is a martyr, you can tell that they're trying so hard to be liked, so hard to be appreciated, so hard to be valued. But underneath it all, you can see they're really angry at having to be nice to, angry at having to make all the compromises and sacrifices in their life, angry at all the powerlessness that they have felt, at all the abuse that they've received. You know, they're not letting it go. Now, martyrhood can also show itself in people who are on the fringe, people who are in demographic categories that the majority are not in. It is easy to martyr yourself if you are an alternative energy enthusiast, if you are gay, if there's something different about you, if you refuse to see doctors, if you drink raw milk and not pasteurized, if you are a man and you watch chick flicks, etc., etc., etc. If you were to take everybody who's in a quote-unquote minority and add them all up, you'd get a majority. Even people think of women as a minority. And there are more women in the population than men. The whole idea about minority is that you are holding an opinion or a lifestyle or a way of being that is different from the mainstream perspective, from the mainstream way. People on the fringe who are part of some minority, who are not, white, male, well-to-do. What is that strangely supposed majority? Of course, even white men are now beginning to use, this is reverse discrimination. Everybody is discriminated against, because everybody's holding the nobility of their position as a defense. And the mainstream is nervous about it. Whatever mainstream ideas that you hold can be threatened by a person who's in a particular demographic fringe that threatens it, that disagrees with it, conflicts with it. So the point is that there's so much conflict out there. There are so many different demographic points of view that it is available to everyone to play martyr in some regard. There are all the conspiracy theorists All those people who are fearing persecution by the government or the CIA or by hidden perps. And indeed, we're not saying that there is not persecution. There is. A part of a government's function is to maintain a sense of order and stability. This order is maintained through law and order. Law is a very reasonable way to maintain order, particularly if it's a democratic republic in which people can vote about it. But then you also get laws that are to keep people from being different, to keep people from, let's say, exploring hallucinogenic substances, to make it a crime against society. And these people will enforce their point of view through order, through police, through might makes right. This sets up a wonderful environment to create enhanced victimhood and for people who are a little bit more complex, adolescents and adults, to be able to step into martyrhood. Now, that's part of the nobilization part. But where it gets insidious, so many times we have seen in the young adult personality, we've talked about the young adult, the one who has the fantasies, the delusions, the imagination, the great, great, great dreams. And we've talked about many times that that young adult can fantasize and dream great wealth and great riches. And every male wants to have great wealth and riches. Or they are on the fringe and saying, no, wealth and riches, that is evil, or that is tainted, that's contaminated, that's worldly. I'm going to be spiritual. But in the business world, the ones with the fantasies go for big deals. They want big deals. They want things to happen. They want to create big corporations. They want to create big businesses. They want to make lots and lots of money fast. Forget this slow plodding over the years type of stuff. I don't want to serve. I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to go through all that work. Let's get a bunch of guys together and let's figure out some kind of clever system and we'll get just lots of bucks moving in here. And so many times these wonderful big deals just fizzle because of the martyrhood issue. There is a place where the martyr feels that they are entitled to be given everything or anything in particular. They are entitled to have other people come into this dream with them. They're entitled for other people to do most of the work and for them to receive the reward. They are entitled because they have suffered, they have sacrificed, they have worked hard in the past. They deserve. They're entitled to it. And entitlement will mean that there'll become disagreements between the partners, disagreements in the business. And as the egos begin to create more and more conflict, the nobility of some will rise to the core. The anger will come to the surface. Personality disputes, criticisms and judgments fly back and forth. The ones that are entitled sitting back on their ass waiting for stuff to come to them are accused of not fulfilling what they said they would do. And they insist, I did not say I would do that. Because in their fantasy, everybody else is doing the work. and it all falls apart. Or it splits up and they all go and find other partners to redream with. So the big deals can keep morphing into other big deals, into other big deals, and other big deals. And some people, this goes on for years and years and years. In personal relationships, in order to avoid conflict and to maintain the relationship, even if the other person is stressed and not acting really the best, one of the members of the relationship, sometimes both of them under different circumstances, will keep their mouth shut. They'll restrain themselves. They'll compromise. No, compromise without saying, look, I'm compromising now. It doesn't come across as a voluntary choice. It doesn't come across in the open. It's always underneath the surface. It's always hidden. Martyrs know how to keep it all under wraps. On the surface, they seem fine, but underneath, they're angry because they're restraining themselves. They're tiptoeing around the other person. And this happens just as much with often in a relationship, and especially a codependent relationship between one as the other, tiptoeing around, hoping that they won't push the buttons wrong. But you see, when you have a martyr, the martyr's angry. The martyr wants to punish somebody for not giving them what they feel entitled to. That anger will always sabotage a relationship. So no matter how much you tiptoe and tiptoe around, one of these days you just can't resist the opportunity and you see that button and you go for it. And you just hit the button and you just tell them off and you just react to blow or whatever. Or you take out an emotional knife and dig around in their weak spot till they feel really bad. You're going to hurt them. It's your revenge for having sacrificed yourself, held yourself back, doing all this giving to them. People who are in service occupations sometimes have the worst of this, because their job is to serve. Their job is to listen, to help, to be a steady person there for others. This is a very high-stress job. And people who are in service occupations burn out quite regularly. Because very often the money in these occupations doesn't seem to compensate for the sacrifice and the loss of self that continuously is required. In a personal relationship, if someone does this, the other person is always going to be beholden, always going to feel guilty, and it's kind of one of the major breakup patterns of a relationship. Where one person says, I have to do it all. I have to do everything. And when do I get mine? When am I going to be supported? When am I going to get what I want? When am I going to be free to just do what I want? Instead, I keep getting hurt, attacked, or undermined. And I just keep giving and giving and... And they can say this even if they're not doing much giving at all. They can be in quite a delightful self-delusion for themselves, rationalizing. As we said, the martyr is excellent at this. It's a highly developed skill to rationalize why you do this or you don't do that. But the orientation inside of it all is that I should have leverage because of this now. That if they object, I can say, wait a minute. I did this for you. You should do this for me. A tit for tat. Or keeping points, keeping score. People who keep score definitely like to play the martyr game. And everyone knows, emotionally, spiritually, heart-wise, is that if you keep score in a relationship, that somehow or another, that relationship will disintegrate. It won't keep going because everybody will be busy scoring. And that scoring point doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be happy. It means you're going to be angrier. Because those points come with a price. If you fall in love with a martyr, expect you're going to pay a stiff price. If you are a martyr, you're looking forward to years of conflict that will never get resolved. Victim consciousness, in its form of martyrhood, just a more complicated form of victim consciousness, is generally present in every adult. It has to be identified and understood and to be released before an adult can actually function in full happiness, success, and personal joy. You're not going to be happy until you give up martyrhood. Martyrhood will always sabotage your efforts, big or small. You'll never get what you want if you're a martyr. Because martyrhood as a pattern will continue to cycle through and through and through. Just when you think you're going to get something, you get denied it and you go into disappointment, which you rationalize then with your anger and frustration into the nobility of your rightness and truth and the wrongness of the other. And you're right back where you started, ready to go for another round. The end to martyrhood comes with forgiveness and releasing anger. Not taking anyone personally. And staying in choice. Staying in your power. Not giving power away either. Unless you do those, you're going to get stuck in or pulled into, seduced into a martyrhood place. It's too easy to go there. Everybody's been there. It's an adolescent pattern, and as you are aware, in the culture that you live in, few people make it into real adulthood. The young adult personality is just a more expanded and complicated and complex adolescent, still has no sense of how to function realistically in the world. That comes with maturity. That comes with, astrologically speaking, the marker of that is somewhere between 28 and 30 with what is called the Saturn return. That is when you have the opportunity to truly step into being a mature person and knowing your place in the world. But do people actually make an effort to find their place in the world, to come into their maturity? No. People are afraid of maturity. Why? Because they see so many miserable adults, miserable grown-ups, you might say, age 30, 40, 50, and beyond, who are just still playing martyr. And before you go into martyr, you basically will say, I'm never going to be there. I'm never going to sacrifice myself. I'm never going to be a doormat that other people walk over to avoid conflict. No, no, not me. 10 years later, listen to yourself. Do that very thing. Well, it's expedient. It's got to be done. But damn it, they're going to have to pay for it. They're going to walk all over me. They're bad people. So understand that the seduction of it, it's a dark, dark seduction. There's nothing positive about it. There's nothing noble about it. It's vicious and it's self-destructive. The reason being that martyrs never step into that place of happiness and glory and rightness recognized that they all want. Why? Because there really isn't a duality. Yeah, the world operates on duality, but the duality that the world operates on is basically like masculine and feminine, night and day. But people in victim consciousness and hence martyr consciousness will attach good and bad, right and wrong. And every day, movies on media continuously talking about the accidents, the tragedies, the rights and wrongs, the good guys, the bad guys. It's hard to get out of that trap. It's hard to get out of that consciousness. It's so reinforced. But if you can, if you are willing, you can forgive yourself for having spent so long there sabotaging yourself and punishing others and hurting others and manipulating others subtly. Even though you justified it all, that you were the victim and they were doing it to you. No, it's a mutual thing. It's a pattern of mutuality that people play. The reason we wanted to talk about martyrhood was because many times we mention it in our discussions and we've realized that many people don't know what it is. Many people think martyrhood, oh, that's sacrificing for some noble purpose. Well, that's the positive spin on it. It's like the tip of the iceberg. What is it they say that typically the tip of the iceberg or the part that shows above water may be a seventh or an eighth of what's under the water? And that's the way it is with martyrhood. The pretty part of martyrhood is only a small percentage of the whole that in and of itself operates under the surface. That's ugly, that's dark. That's manipulative and destructive. So we'll go into a little meditation shortly in which we will do some clearing for martyrhood and establish a different sense of self. Because there is something other than martyrhood to be. Martyrs, if you notice, have a tendency to attract to themselves losing situations, disappointments, setbacks, slowdowns, rejections, and hurts. It's a part of the cycle because you have to track that in order to go through your next martyr cycle. It is a synchronistic kind of thing. When you say to the universe, your personified reality, hey, you know, I'm angry and I want to manipulate. I'm unwilling to get rid of my anger. I'm unwilling to forgive myself. I'm unwilling to be a powerful person and take responsibility for my whole reality. I'd rather blame somebody and I'd rather undermine them. I'd rather be the misunderstood and unappreciated one and be noble than to be really truthful. I want to be right all the time. I want other people to see me as right, as good, and noble and true. So martyrhood, that is for me. So your personified reality will say, yes, good, all right, whatever you want, we'll send it to you. We'll send you all the opportunities to be the great martyr you want. Now, very few people choose to be the martyr truly in the noble saints and go off courageously to do battle, to die. At least not that many in the United States. But there are people who are doing that all around the world. A lot of conflicts. There is a certain amount of, like the uprising from the Arab Spring and to the Arab Summer. There's a lot of real, you know, we've got to take our power back from the tyrants. But you see, where it shows in your personal life is what we're talking about. How you attract problems, how you attract trouble, how you attract lackfulness. It all reinforces the martyr persona. But you see, it's all magic. Martyrs have a tremendous amount of magic at their disposal because they attract so much bad luck. They attract health problems, so they have excuses why they cannot serve others. They have exhaustion. Ah, it's because I'm so overworked, I gave too much. Martyrs have all sorts of amazing synchronicities to bring about the opportunity to destroy themselves, to be right, and yet still stuck in a little box. When you move out of martyr, however, you bust your box, you move into a larger sphere of influence, you move into a grander playground. And this grander playground, in your power, in your freedom, loving yourself and loving others, and really being honest and true with your emotions and not sneaking around with them, you turn into a person who utilizes light magic, positive synchronicities. A big positive thing coming into the life of a martyr is a fluke. And if the person doesn't rise to the occasion and step out of their martyr consciousness, they will sabotage even the best things that come to them. Hence the experience of so many people who won the lottery. Yes, my problems are solved. And 2 or 3 years later, that was one of the worst things that ever happened in my life, and I'm back to where I was financially, and I've lost friends, and there's been conflicts, and it's been a terrible experience. You want magic, light magic, not martyr magic. So where you'll move to when you move out of martyr is to being able to allow beautiful magic, beautiful synchronicities, beautiful energies to come to you. But if your identity is martyr, you won't be able to accept them, or if you accept them, you will not be able to sustain them. Great business opportunities can fizzle. Doesn't even take a conflict between the partners. It only takes one martyr. If there's going to be a robbery on a street, who's going to get robbed? Who has the synchronicity of disappointment and suffering? The martyr, the victim. Their house will be robbed. the house next to it. People who are not in martyr particularly at that time, or not particularly attracting aid as much, will be spared. You want the synchronicities to work for you. You want to explore light magic. And when you stop being a martyr, you become a magician of light magic. A different persona. Now, it's not instant from time to time. You have to, once you shift out of martyr, you have to go back into your daily life, and in your daily life, piece by piece, moment by moment, thread by thread, pattern by pattern, end the martyr pattern. This is the discipline that most people don't really like. Oh, great, I'll do a meditation, I'll step into my greater self. Oh, 2 or 3 days later, I'm back in martyr, I'm back in whatever it was. Because the discipline that it takes to be aware, to stay in choice, to stay in your power, is huge. Especially against the seduction of the martyr. Come hither, come hither. Here's an opportunity for you to be innocent, and they to be guilty. For you to punish them for being bad. For you to be able to rationalize everything bad that happens to you as being partly something that's going to build your character, because obviously you're a very high character, you're a very powerful, spiritual, wonderful person. It's seductive. Your ego can fall for it. So it means you're going to have to be on top of all of that. And when you feel the seduction, the dark lover coming at you, no, I'm going to stay in my power. I'm going to stay in my choice. I'm going to love myself. I'm going to care about me. I'm going to care about other people. I'm going to look at my emotions, and I'm not going to let myself get carried away by my anger. I'm not going to want to do any kind of revenge. And I'm not entitled. And I'm going to receive it, not get it, not suck it out of anyone. The people who suck energy, definitely martyrs. Nobody wants to be around anyone that sucks their energy. And the people who suck energy just don't ever understand why people don't want to be around them. I'm just such a good person. I have such a hard time in my life. They're not willing to support me. They're being very uncaring. Very few of them will listen to my sad tale anymore. But if you're a magician and you don't fall for the martyr, your life takes a golden turn into the light. Yeah, there'll be times where you'll fall back into martyr and you go, oops, oh, look what I just did. I just sabotaged myself there. I just went into entitlement there. I just went into my ego and did stuff. And you just have to say, oh, ha, well, look at that. There it is again. Boy, that martyr is really something. I'm out of it now. And move on. That's all it takes. You don't have to buy into it. And if you don't, gradually you'll be able to be more grateful for your life, to be able to receive rather than to get. To get yourself off, to become off of deadlines, survival deadlines. You'll move out of survival mode. Emotionally, financially, physically. A lot of healing can happen. And that's why we put together these love and healings. So we're going to do some healing for you. Whatever it is that you have that needs to be healed generally is directly connected to old patterns of martyrhood, if not current ones. All right, so is there a question or anything like that? Anyone dare?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm so grateful to be here today. I'm grateful that you're here today. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You nailed me with that one. That is so interesting. And listening to this and you know, it's not one of those descriptions I'd put on myself. But definitely there's some absolute thread of truth about that with some of the behaviors of mine, for sure. What's been interesting lately is I've been aware of certain behaviors that I find in others that I find not to be annoying or to be, I'll judge them in some way, that I'm actually doing myself. And that awareness is coming to me, mirroring to me almost so clearly. And I'm so grateful for that. And when it happens and I'm aware of it, I can break that pattern almost immediately.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm. Because of my willingness, you know, to not want to be judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
To myself or others. But the martyr thing is real interesting, and the victim consciousness is real interesting, and it all makes sense that I would be limiting myself by taking that on. And then I sit here and I think, listen, and I think about what's the root cause of that, you know? So I'm hoping that in our little healing meditation that I don't need to know the root cause, but I hope that it can be busted up.
All right, and you're talking about your own personal unique
yes.
root cause?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. And I guess my question or my point is that one of the things I've been working on for a long time now is that there's this thread of the meanness that I have in me. There's this so-called, for lack of a better description, insensitivity sometimes, indifference. And I think it's some sort of a protection. I'm not really sure. And I'm having a difficult time trying to wrap my brain around it and what it is that I need to do in order to be able to be more kind and loving and not be perceived as weak.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, you're living in a macho culture. In a macho culture, kind and loving. Oh, good. We can just walk over you.
Right, or get my
but
way
that's
with
the
you.
Martyr approach.
Right,
to eat. You can be very kind and very loving, but if you're in your power, nobody can walk over you, and so that's the difference. The martyr essentially gives their power away in exchange for the right to be angry later, and to judge later.
And I'm not really interested in that. That's not my motive. That's not
well,
my
but,
motive.
But you see, you have spent time there.
Absolutely,
and that's part of the seduction.
Mm-hmm.
Is that you get the privilege, or you think the justification, to be able to separate, detach, and judge. And that's where you're looking at your streak of meanness that you have in there. And that comes from old martyr remnants. You see, if you look in your past, you can see that in your past when you were younger, how angrier you were.
Yes.
You're not as angry now as you were then.
Right.
Right. But every now and then, you just get so tired of trying to keep yourself in line and trying to be good and true and so on. And it seems that other people don't seem to be putting as much effort into this as you are. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you get pissy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your meanness comes from there. You separate and detach yourself from those people. There's a little judgment in there. Or a lot, depending on what you're aware of, you'll be able to identify. But overall, the mean streak of meanness is essentially where it kind of comes over a line. There's a build-up of sorts in which you've felt that you've kind of restrained yourself, tried hard, restrained yourself, and after a while you just, damn it, I don't want to restrain myself anymore.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're like an angry animal. And then you feel guilty sometimes when that happens, like, oh my gosh, I should not have gone there. I should be more kind and loving.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing to do here is to stop judging yourself when you go over the line and just realize that you've gone over the line and that you've gone over the line because somewhere you've been restraining yourself, trying to control yourself, trying to manage things, trying to get your life to work right so that everything moves smoothly and you've been doing all this work or whatever it is. You understand? That
yes.
At some point, even though you might be doing that consistently, you might be doing that almost automatically as a habit now, still there's an element of self-restraint or some kind of minor self-repression in there where somebody says something in the past you would have absolutely loved to tell them off and you don't. I'm going to be nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big flashing red light that says, martyr, martyr, martyr. So how do you respond differently to something like that, you see? As you start to become aware of where those little tiny pieces, each one of themselves, almost insignificant as far as their emotional weight, but layered and layered and layered and layered, after a while they become a big pile.